because, you know, we have a crisis. We have in this area, which is Pará, the state of Pará, you also have the where the activists were murdered a few months ago. Six people have already been murdered in recent months.
Tosi, I wanted to break in because we've just gotten this breaking news from Georgia. Clemency has been denied for Troy Davis. The Board of Pardons and Parole has denied clemency, which means unless anything changes, he will be executed on September 21st. That's Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time in Jackson, Georgia. Again, clemency has been denied for Troy Anthony Davis. We're going to wrap the show right now. I want to thank you very much, Tulsa Satani, for joining us. Latest news out of Brazil is that Brazilian authorities have arrested two brothers in connection with the murders of two Amazon environmental activists, José Claudio Ribeiro da Silva and his wife Maria do Espírito Santo. He predicted he would be killed when he went back to Brazil. He said, "I will protect the forest at all costs. That is why I could get a bullet in my head at any moment." Those are the words of José, who was executed. That does it for our broadcast. Again, the latest news in this country, Troy Anthony Davis's appeal for clemency has been denied. He is set to be executed September 21st, Wednesday at 7 p.m. in Georgia. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Ryan Devereaux, Dina Guzder, Manal Khan, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Nick Gilla, Hugh Grand. We have a job opening. It's an audio-video archivist. You can go to our website at democracynow.org for more details. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, I'm Bob Longman with your WUSB Concert Billboard for Monday, September 19th. Steely Dan will be at the Beacon Theater in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Katie Herzig and Butterfly Boucher will be at the Mercury Lounge in Manhattan at 7:30. It'll be the introduction for a new album from Katie Herzig. The Rock Yo Face Case will be at the University Cafe at Stony Brook University. 3DB, This Good Robot, and Black Taxi. That starts at 8 p.m. Jane Monheit will be at the Burtland in Manhattan at 7 p.m. Your concert billboard for Tuesday, September 20th. Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah at the Bowery Ballroom in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Keb Moe will be at B.B. King's in Manhattan at 8 p.m. At the Music Hall of Williamsburg, Deerhoof, Mick Barr, and White Sons. That's at 9 p.m. Steely Dan will be at the Beacon Theater again in Manhattan at 8 p.m. And continuing on until October 15th will be the Yoko Ono Imagine Peace featuring John and Yoko's Year of Peace at the Stoller Center for the Arts at the University Art Gallery in Stony Brook University. That's 12 noon to 4 p.m. Your concert billboard for Wednesday, September 21st. Still at the Beacon Theater in Manhattan at 8 p.m., Steely Dan. Tinsley Ellis will be at the Fairfield Theater in Fairfield, Connecticut at 8 p.m. At the Blue Note in Manhattan, Gary Burton Quartet will be there through the rest of the week. That's at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m., two shows a night. Joanna Monte and Frank Walker will be at the Plum Crazy in Kings Park, New York. And at the Black and Blue in Huntington, Mark Phillips.
That's today's concert billboard. Tune in to WUSB every day to hear who's playing where in the area. Or go to WUSB.fm and see the concert list with your own eyes to see now and for months to come. Or the most up-to-date info on the Facebook group at WUSB Concert Billboard. And where can you hear all this music? 90.1 FM, WUSB, Stony Brook.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, where it's 5 minutes after 6 o'clock. Good Lord. It's time for Off the Wall to get started. Yeah, I should have known. I should have known this wasn't going to work either. Okay, let's... Oh, I see. Someone sabotaged this. They pressed all the wrong buttons. Wonderful. Thank you, guys. Thanks so much. As if I don't have enough to worry about. Okay, that's time. Now it's 6 minutes after 6 o'clock time for Off the Wall. There's nothing wrong with your radio. There's just something wrong with your radio station. I'm sorry. This is, it's just too much. The CD player just will not get fixed, no matter how long it stays broken for. But maybe that's not the problem. Maybe you're hearing us getting obliterated by a 45-watt station from Connecticut, which went back on the air, and our 4,000 watts just can't compete with that. Maybe it's a pirate station in Queens or Brooklyn that's wiping us out in Nassau County. I don't know. Maybe it's a station in Philadelphia that's stepping. We're the most stepped-on radio station in the world. But I will not be stepped on myself. Right, Kyle?
Right.
All right, good. I'm not quite sure what that means, but... it's I had a fight with a CD player earlier tonight, not even in the station, when I was burning a CD. Just, you know, racing out of the house, trying to get here on time, and all of a sudden the computer says, you know what, I'm not going to give you your CD. Just not going to do it. Wow, a lot of gnashing of teeth there. But we got the CD out. Unfortunately, well, this isn't the CD that we're playing. This is the CD that was already burned. And as you can hear, it sounds so amazing. Because it skips every couple of seconds.
Well, maybe optical media is feeling the pain. They're feeling pressure from new formats and all this new stuff. And the old CDs and DVDs are grumbling and doing their saber rattling, you know, boycotting and not moving their trays the way they normally do. And you know, so eventually they'll die off as the new formats come in.
Yeah, well, you know, these new formats are no friends to us, I don't think.
No, I don't think it's any improvement.
Let's go back to vinyl, you know, where records, you heard some crackle, you heard some skipping, but it didn't do this, at least.
Absolutely.
And our signal get out everywhere, you wouldn't have all these other stations stepping on you all over the place. Good old days. Anyway, enough about that. We're going to try and get through this. It's Tuesday night. And as you may have heard, the story. Of course, there are people with far greater problems than us. That whole Troy Davis case coming out of Georgia, late breaking news that the appeal has not been granted, and he's scheduled to be executed tomorrow at 7 p.m., precisely the time of Off the Hook. Now, I'm not complaining about that so much, but the fact is the program is preempted as a result of that, because there'll be a two-hour Democracy Now tomorrow on WBAI, so that it's right smack in the middle. Everything always happens on Wednesday night, whether it's parties, meetings, or people getting executed. It always seems to happen on Wednesday night. I don't know why that is. Something sociological, I guess. But not to make light of it, it's a very serious thing. In fact, we're going to talk about this. This is an important story, something that I think is kind of emblematic of where we stand today in our society. Now, who is this Troy Davis, you may ask? Those of you who might not have been listening to news, or might not have been listening to the wrong type of news, or maybe you're in the future sometime listening to an archive of the program, you have no idea what we're talking about. Well, it's circa September... September what? What's today's date? I don't even know what today's date is. Do you know what today's date is? The 20th. Okay. September 20th, 2011. We have this story about Troy Davis. He was convicted of the August 19th, 1989 murder of Savannah, Georgia police officer Mark McPhail. Now, McPhail was working as a security guard at a Burger King. When he intervened in an argument between several men in a nearby parking lot, he was shot by one of these men, Sylvester Coles went to police and implicated Troy Davis in the killing. Davis was arrested 4 days later. Now, during Davis's 1991 trial, many witnesses testified they had seen Davis shoot McPhail. Two others testified that Davis had confessed the murder to them. The murder weapon was never found. No physical evidence linked Davis to the crime. Throughout his trial and subsequent appeals, Davis has maintained his innocence. He was convicted and sentenced to death in August of 1991. Now, many appeals in state and federal courts followed. Davis and his lawyers argued that the racial composition of the jury, poor advocacy from his lawyers, had affected his right to a fair trial. Seven of the original nine eyewitnesses who had linked Davis to the killing recanted all or part of their trial testimony. Several stated they had felt pressure by police to implicate Davis. New witnesses implicated Coles in the crime. Now, Coles was the guy who implicated Davis in the first place, went to the cops and said Davis was the guy who did this. The appeals were denied, with courts declaring that Davis had not provided a substantive claim of innocence and that the recantations were unpersuasive. Execution dates have been scheduled, but have been stayed. Looks like this one is not going to be stayed. And it's a big deal. It really is, because it looks like there is reasonable doubt. I'm not saying the guy is innocent or guilty, because I don't know. I wasn't there. But neither were any of these other people, supposedly, who are so adamant that they got the right guy. So when you have that element of doubt, especially when there have been so many cases recently of DNA evidence exonerating people, And the eagerness of courts to go ahead and convict people, even if it's the wrong person, that's something to take into consideration in situations like this. Amnesty International, other groups such as the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, took up Davis's cause. Prominent politicians and leaders, including former President Jimmy Carter, Al Sharpton, Pope Benedict XVI. You get the Pope on your side. That's a major achievement. I couldn't get him to stand up for me, and this guy got him to stand up for him.
Wow.
I mean, that's an accomplishment right there. President Carter, Al Sharpton's pretty easy to get him to stand up for you, but Pope Benedict XVI, Nobel laureate Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Wow.
Whoa.
Presidential candidate Bob Barr. He's a right-wing Republican, that guy. Bob Barr. He's from Georgia, too.
Wow.
And former FBI director and judge William Sessions called upon the courts to grant Davis a new trial evidentiary hearing. It's not saying he's innocent, saying, let's look at the evidence. Let's look at the evidence freshly and in light of these new developments, or these developments that have been ignored over the... I'm just going to turn the CD down. I'm going to turn it off because it's so annoying. Thank you. sorry about that. I apologize to all the listeners. Not only for the technical snafus and the signal degradation, but just for my outbursts. They're inappropriate, uncalled for, and regrettable. In August 17th, 2000... Wait a minute, I'm reading from Wikipedia, and sometimes Wikipedia just has these snafus. You don't start a sentence, in August 17th, 2009... It's on August 17th, 2009. It should be in August 2009. Someone obviously edited this but didn't fix the word.
Right.
All right, so your choice, Kyle. Is it going to be in August 2009 or on August 17th, 2009?
I'd say on August 17th. I mean, okay, that's accurate, and, you know, it is an encyclopedia.
Well, let's not dwell upon it then.
No.
August 17th, 2009, the U.S. Supreme Court, over the dissenting votes of two justices, ordered a federal district court in Georgia to consider whether new evidence, quote, that could not have been obtained at the time of trial clearly establishes Davis's innocence, unquote. That hearing was held in June of 2010, during which several former prosecution witnesses recanted their previous testimony and described police coercion. Other witnesses asserted that Coles had confessed to the killing. This evidence was excluded, as Coles was not given the opportunity to rebut it. So it's as if it never existed. In an August 2010 decision, the conviction was upheld. Within the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Georgia, declaring that the new evidence cast only minimal doubt on his conviction. Earlier today, the board denied him final clemency. It's an interesting story. Now, just to give you background on what actually happened on the evening of August 18th, 1989, or what is alleged to have happened, Davis briefly attended a pool party hosted by a friend. As he left with his friend Darryl Collins, the occupants of a passing car yelled obscenities at them. Michael Cooper, a passenger in the other car, was shot in the face, allegedly by Davis. Davis and Collins continued on and later met Sylvester Coles, who was arguing with a homeless man, Larry Young, over a beer. Real cream of the crop here, but the story continues. Off-duty policeman Mark McPhail was working as a security guard at a nearby Burger King in Savannah. McPhail basically intervened and wound up being shot by somebody, allegedly Davis. Now, on the evening of August 19th, Coles went to the police. He told them he had seen Davis with a .38 caliber gun and that Davis had assaulted the homeless man. The same evening, Davis drove to Atlanta with his sister. In the early morning of August 20th, 1989, Savannah police, suspecting Davis and seeking a murder weapon, converged on the Davis home. Having sealed off the area, the police searched the house, and a pair of shorts belonging to Davis were found in a dryer and confiscated. Police issued a reward for information leading to his arrest. The Davis family began negotiating with police, motivated by concerns about his safety. Local drug dealers were making death threats because the police dragnet seeking Davis had interrupted their business. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. On August 23rd, 1989, Davis was driven back to Savannah by members of his family, where he surrendered to police, and he was charged with the policeman McPhail's murder. Hundreds of mourners, including county, state, federal law enforcement officials, had attended McPhail's funeral the day before. Now, the interesting thing about this is that whenever there is a cop that has been killed, whether it's on duty or off duty, and you have somebody in custody that is even believed to be remotely connected to it, emotions run very high. It's understandable that emotions would run high, but it doesn't necessarily follow that the facts are 100% correct. And I just have to wonder, the people who are so sure about this, why are they so sure when there are so many doubts being raised? And what exactly is the harm? What exactly is the harm in looking at it a little bit closer? I see reactions by the family of the policeman who was killed, and obviously they're going to say things like this. They said that Davis and his family had duped people into believing in his innocence. "We know what the truth is," McPhail's widow told CNN earlier. "For someone to ludicrously say that he is a victim, we are victims. Look at us. We have put up with this stuff for 22 years. It's time for justice. We need our justice." And I can understand them wanting closure for this, but how do you really know if you weren't there yourself? You have to look at the evidence. You have to look at the people who have implicated other people. You have to look at what they've said over the years. And step back a little bit, hard as that might be, and ask yourself, maybe, am I being told the truth? Maybe am I being misled? And maybe are my emotions getting the better of me? Unreliable eyewitnesses, the impact of race on a jury in the Deep South, the difficulty of proving innocence once convicted. Troy Davis's long journey through the U.S. judicial system has hit nearly every sensitive button in America's complex relationship with the death penalty. And earlier today, the Georgia Board of Pardons and Paroles declined the final clemency bid by Mr. Davis, 42 years old, who has spent 20 years on death row for the murder of an off-duty police officer back in 1989. The board reaffirmed the validity of the original conviction by a jury of his peers. But to many legal experts, doubts raised about Davis's guilt after his conviction raised new questions about the Supreme Court's determination that so-called executive clemency, the power of a governor or review board to commute a death row sentence, is an adequate fail-safe for assessing death row innocence claims. If a case like this doesn't result in clemency, which is a discretionary process that calls a halt to an execution based on doubt surrounding the integrity of the verdict, then it suggests that clemency as a traditional fail-safe is not adequate. That's according to James Acker, a criminologist at the State University of New York at Albany. The Davis case raises doubts about the discretionary clemency process and ultimately raises doubts about whether the legal system can tolerate this potential error in allowing a person to be executed. Now, the number of people executed in the United States has dwindled steadily over the past 15 years. A majority of Americans, though, about 64%, still support the death penalty. At a recent GOP presidential candidate debate, we mentioned this last week, a crowd cheered when Texas Governor Rick Perry, the current Republican frontrunner, noted the 234 executions carried out under his watch. Imagine that, just cheering for a high number of executions. But also this summer, an Arkansas judge allowed a complex legal maneuver to free three men known as the West Memphis Three, including one who was on death row for the murder of three boys 18 years ago. Moreover, North Carolina, once one of the most active death penalty states, currently has a moratorium on death penalties on the death penalty. It's really fading in the United States. There is a lot of disagreement about why that is, but certainly there are fewer executions than there used to be. Said Jeffrey Toobin, the New Yorker's legal writer on CNN today. This one does appear to be going forward even with all the protests. Now, DNA-based death row exonerations have influenced the public's view, but the Troy Davis case rises to the top of the death penalty debate for several reasons. For one, he is arguably the best-known person on any U.S. death row, and the show of public support for a new trial has been unprecedented, with nearly 700,000 people petitioning the parole board. Global figures like Pope Benedict XVI, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Jimmy Carter, and even death penalty supporters like former Congressman Bob Barr all urge the parole board to either commute his sentence or give him a new trial. Wow. So this could be major. This could be big. This could be something that's truly a milestone in and the whole legal system here in this country. I just get the feeling that certain people in law enforcement, certain people in the court system, they believe so much that a decision is final and incontrovertible and can never be proven wrong, that they have no trouble. They have no trouble saying, yeah, well, you're in jail. You must be guilty. People might have made a mistake, but it doesn't really matter because in the greater scheme of things, it's all for the common good, and let's just move on and put this behind us. You know, does that seem right? Not right what they're saying, but do you think that's a right assessment, that that's how people think, that's how people feel, that's how people in charge seem to view it?
I'm confused.
Okay, well, you're right where you should be then, if you're confused.
I actually, what are you asking me?
Never mind. It's too complex. It's too, basically, it's...
No, it isn't, because I had three other things I wanted to talk about in that article while you were reading.
Well, it's basically, okay, what I'm asking is the court system so filled with overconfidence in itself that no matter what the evidence presented against it, no matter how badly it seems they screwed up, they're still going to stand by their decisions,
yeah,
even if they're bad decisions. They're still going to protect a cop that shoots an innocent person caught on videotape,
yeah,
and bragging about it in a bar later as well, you know, he was doing what he thought was best at the time. Things like that, this attitude.
I think our court system is overconfident in that sense. I think that just emboldens the judicial system and everybody that benefits from that, and you know, why would they want to say, oh, you know what, we might have screwed up? Why would they want to say like poke holes in their own process? I mean, absolutely, I think so. But
and that's that's hard to do, the poke holes in your own basically
apologizing's tough.
It really is.
For people,
it really is. And you see this, I brought up cops as a rule because you see this there more than any place. When a cop does something horrible, such as shooting somebody who's clearly innocent, we've seen it so many times, all the other cops stand up for them as if they didn't do anything wrong when clearly they did. And this is what angers people. This is what gets people to view cops as the enemy when in actuality they should be members of the community. And it causes a real divide. This is no different because you have a situation where there is clearly doubt. There is clearly evidence that has changed. And yet, because a trial happened in the past, it's not the hand of God saying that this is true, this will always be true. Things do change. Things come to light. New evidence can be presented. And I know the family wants to put it behind them, but wouldn't they also rather get the truth? And I'm not sure how you can be so confident that the truth is out there if you were not there watching every minute of it yourself.
Well, there's plenty of other people on death row. They got to move on. They got a lot of things in their inbox, and they've got, you know, other things to do. So why not just, you know, let it move on? Hey, can I get you to rewind, like back up a little bit here?
Sure.
Because I don't know anything about this case at all, and I was listening very intently, and actually three things came to mind while you were reading it. First of all, is the only step beyond clemency, is the only failsafe after clemency a presidential pardon? Like, is there nothing more that could allow him to not be executed tomorrow?
The president cannot step in on this because it's a state court that did this.
Really? Right? So that's only when they, like, leave office and that kind of thing?
I believe the governor can step in.
The governor can step in. So, but generally, like, you can do pardons, I guess. Isn't that traditional? Like, a president leaves office and he can pardon various people and all of that. But there's no other failsafe. So this clemency is really the final blow. I mean, the governor would be able to step in. Is that's it?
I think the governor could step in at this point, but
there's no other appeal process or anything else. Pretty much has to go forward.
Very unlikely to. I think, but you know, here's the thing, and we always say, you know, stupid things like we live in a nation of laws. Well, I don't know what that means, but it means that we can never bend or yield or second guess ourselves. Well, I think in this case, We can show strength by second-guessing ourselves and saying, let's make sure that we're doing the right thing here. Not that I think the death penalty is ever the right thing, but let's at least make sure we've got the facts right. What is the hurry exactly? It's some kind of a misplaced notion that if we don't execute this guy exactly when we say we're going to do it, somehow the terrorists win, or we're seen as right. weak, or something silly like that. Let's put it on hold, take some time, think this over, and weigh all the evidence and see if you can find who was really behind this. And if it's this guy that's really behind it, then let the legal system play out in whatever way it does.
Okay, so my next question was, did you say that he left a pool party?
Yes.
And was with somebody else and shot somebody that was shouting profanity
well,
at them? What was that all about? Because that kind of makes me question.
Yes.
I mean, what pack is he running with? Because really, that doesn't do him much good as far as innocence. If you're involved with a shooting and then you go somewhere else and then you're alleged to be involved in the shooting, that kind of says, it's a pretty good possibility you were, if that's your night on the town, that doesn't make me believe he's very innocent.
Well, it is a huge leap of logic to assume that just because somebody shot somebody once that night that they're responsible for a second shooting a little while later.
What? Are you kidding me?
It is. I mean, all kinds of people are shooting people every day. Welcome to America. Come on.
Look,
but in this, to be fair,
I am all for like reevaluating this. I don't want to rush people to the gallows any more than anybody else.
And it would be lethal injection, by the way. We're not barbarians. We don't hang people anymore. We just stab them with drugs.
How about guillotine?
I don't think so. I think that's only in
Can you still get
special
tickets?
Request and only if you have a really good record.
Okay.
Well, they give you that.
We can still get tickets to it and stuff?
Yeah, that's the thing. What kind of person goes to see an execution? There are people who do this. There are people in the family, obviously, that want to see this.
Yeah.
And there are journalists. I can't imagine what kind of... Well, you do have to report the things that happen. And there have been gruesome instances,
gruesome.
And that should be known by people. This is what happens.
Yes.
But I can't imagine people going for entertainment. And you know, if they could put this, it could be like the next reality show. They could put it on TV, and it would be a big hit, and not too much below the quality that we see on network television today. But that's...
So please, though, just to get back on what I was saying, what... Explain that.
Okay,
why exactly should I believe he's innocent if he's, you know, doing multiple shootings in a night and then, okay, yeah,
you have fallen,
that wasn't him.
You have fallen into a little trap here because I don't believe I can try and find the actual thing that I quoted here.
I said I don't know anything about it.
No,
so
educate. Well, you may not know anything about it, but let's see. Okay, hang on. Murder weapon, one of the men. If you could fill some time while I'm looking up what I said before, that would really be helpful.
The other thing I did want to say is that aside from our judicial system being so confident,
uh-huh.
I think our prison system would just would prefer to have more prisoners. That's good for, you know, if we start killing everybody, that's bad for business. I mean...
Ah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, it's just there's many pages here, and I had to find it. Okay. So anyway, at the trial, this is what I said. At the trial in August 1991, the district attorney sought the death penalty. According to the prosecution, did I read this part or did I not read this part? Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah, I mean, I'll let you read the whole thing.
According to the prosecution, Davis had shot Michael Cooper. No, wait. That's not the part I read. I read something about people shouting obscenities from a car. I don't see that part
right.
here.
That confused me.
Yeah. Well, we'll continue with what you were saying. I'm going to keep looking.
Oh, no. I'm saying maybe another reason we might not want to rush the death penalty is so that we can keep people in prison because we need as many... warm bodies in there to keep these prisons open. The private prison industry is really suffering with the downturn in the economy. So if you can go out and get arrested, if you're thinking about going to jail, kids, if you're looking for something to do after high school, definitely the jail system needs you because, You know, taxpayers are only going to pay for jails that are full of people.
I found it. This time I really did find it. On the evening of August 18th, 1989, Davis briefly attended a pool party hosted by a friend. Okay. As he left with his friend Daryl Collins, the occupants of a passing car yelled obscenities at them. Michael Cooper, a passenger in the other car, was shot in the face, allegedly by Davis. Those three words sailed right over your head, allegedly by Davis. Allegedly. That one word particularly
Michael
sailed.
Cooper? Who's that?
Michael Cooper is the guy who got shot in the other car who allegedly was yelling obscenities.
So they were leaving the party in a car.
Doesn't say they allegedly yelled obscenities. It says that's a fact that they yelled obscenities. But he was definitely shot. There's no allegedly there. And allegedly by Davis. So that's the thing. He's accused of it. But the way I read the story, you assume that he actually was involved, and that's how most people
do. No. I'm not assuming he was involved because I get that it was alleged. I think you're oversimplifying it. I think so.
You said you had doubts about whether or not he was guilty of this particular shooting of the cop that he's going to be killed for tomorrow because of what I read before.
I had doubts about his innocence.
Yes, doubts about his innocence, but
and I think was he leaving with two people? So okay, if it was allegedly, and we're gonna give him the benefit of the doubt, then it must have been the other guy he was with. Still, you're rolling with shooters.
Mm-hmm.
That's your character, isn't it? Don't they do you have a character witness? This is the type of guy he is. I mean, shouldn't he be more like, you know, on the debate team and so, like sort of a nerdy guy? I mean,
he rolls with shooters.
Build up a case.
He rolls with shooters. He hangs out with drug dealers and people who lie and drink beer in parking lots of convenience
stores. I'm just
saying
that's fuel for people that want the death penalty.
That is fuel, and that makes people less sympathetic.
I'm not exactly. So it's not looking good.
It makes people sleep better when they confront themselves with the idea that maybe they put the wrong person to death.
Right,
for
when
a crime.
They pull the thing on the guillotine and it chops. Yeah, absolutely.
He was no saint. I mean, he probably would have done it anyway.
Right.
At some point.
Right.
But let me just read you something from 1991. This is from a news story at the trial. Troy Anthony Davis, Tuesday, calmly denied shooting off-duty Savannah police officer Mark Allen McPhail 2 years ago, telling jurors he was fleeing the scene of an assault when he heard a gunshot. Davis, on trial for McPhail's slaying on August 19, 1989, sat back in the witness box and coolly told jurors he was innocent. I'm not sure where they're going with this calmly and coolly thing. It makes him sound kind of like a cold-blooded killer.
There's
always bias in news stories, and this is from the Savannah Morning News, so I don't doubt there's some bias here. Did you shoot Officer McPhail? Defense lawyer Nancy Askew asked Davis. What a name, Askew.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. No, I sure didn't, he said. His responses were met with murmured approval from family members and spectators in the fourth floor courtroom. Davis was the final defense witness to take the stand as testimony closed in the case on Tuesday afternoon. The 7-man and 5-woman jury is scheduled to return to court today for closing arguments and Judge James W. Head's instructions on the law before beginning deliberations. District Attorney Spencer Lawton Jr. is seeking the death penalty. In addition to the murder charge, Davis is charged with aggravated assault by shooting Michael Cooper in Cloverdale late August 18th, 1989, and with aggravated assault by striking Larry Young, that's the homeless guy, with a pistol moments before McPhail was slain. Davis has pleaded innocent to all charges.
Right.
I didn't assault Larry Young. I never assaulted Michael Cooper by shooting him, Davis told Lawton on the cross-examination Tuesday. I don't remember how the policeman looked. I can't imagine myself why a person would shoot somebody and smile about it. An eyewitness, Harriet Murray, testified earlier that Davis shot McPhail as he lay on the ground, then had a little smile on his face before fleeing. Davis told jurors that Sylvester Cole just turned and slapped the guy as they walked across the Burger King parking lot quarreling over some beer. This is the guy that later implicated him in the murder. He says that this guy slapped the homeless guy in the parking lot. Young's cries for help brought McPhail to the scene. I started walking off, said Davis. I started jogging. I heard someone say, hold it. I heard a shot and sped up. I heard a couple more shots, Davis said, adding that he never looked back. And that's his statement as far as what actually what he says actually happened on that night. How do you prove otherwise? Well, you listen to the people that say he wasn't one involved, including Sylvester Cole, who not only has been implicated by various other people, but has supposedly confessed to this to others. Again, I'm not sure how you make this something that actually is legally binding. But so many witnesses, 7 out of 9 witnesses recanted their testimony. I'm not sure if the woman who testified in court was one of them, but it's certainly enough to raise doubt. It really is. And that's something that seems to be cast aside in things like this. So anyway, that's where it stands. Tomorrow, 7 o'clock, just about 24 hours from now. It's going to be an interesting development.
Well, from what it sounds like, it does need a little bit more attention because I'm still a little confused. But I mean, I certainly don't think that, you know, just because he's perhaps was involved with people that were shooting other people, that he's a murderer just by association. I don't think guilt by association is the right thing to do. And honestly, if you're listening out there and you heard me say that you should go to prison if you're graduating from high school and you need something to do, please don't. If you don't need anybody else in prison. I was kidding. But
Do you mean that? Or are you just reacting to the crowd that's gathered in the conference room with picket signs? I don't know how they got them made so fast, but
is that what those are?
I mean, you should maybe just talk to them. And yeah. I mean, I'm sure the listeners understand. But yeah, it's quite a case. So if you haven't heard about it, that's what's going on. That's why Off the Hook is preempted tomorrow, and that's why you should pay attention to the news because it's interesting. Interesting things are always happening. Shall we open up to phone calls? What do you think?
Yes, please.
All right, we can do that. If delay is working, I'm not sure it is, but we're going to try to do our best. Please pardon any strange sounds you might hear or anything that just doesn't seem right because, well, we're trying. We're trying as hard as we can. Our phone number is 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. We'll be back in just one moment with a new sound, 7 seconds from the past.
Hey, this is Best Coast. You're listening to Think Out Loud on WUSB Stony Brook.
And here we are, in delay. Did we make it? You know, I'm never sure if we make it in delay. I got to throw all the right buttons. I think we did. Okay. Now, Kyle, it's your turn. Can you join us here in delay land?
I feel like I'm here.
Yeah. Okay. It sounds like you're there.
Am I there?
Yeah. You're there.
I'd like to be there.
Well, the thing that we really need now to make this complete is for our callers to join us in delay land.
Is anybody out there? Can they hear through?
Oh, look, they're out there. Look at that.
No way.
All those little red lights, that means they're out there.
Okay.
Or it means that someone has all the phones off the hook. Finn, what are you up to? No, okay. Let's take a phone call then. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, how you doing? You know, our system is a great system, but it's abused. So many times, it's when a cop does something wrong, they never prosecute him or they twist it. Suffolk County is a great example. The cases aren't handled properly in the court, and they will screw you. And it's also got a very high appeal rate, the things that are turned over on appeal because they were done wrong from the start. Not only that, if you go into New York State criminal law, they deny people that don't have, can't afford the proper defense, the right to the hearing. When I say the hearing, I'm not being casual. It's a nickname for the felony hearing. That's at 18070, I believe, numbers of the criminal procedure law.
Okay, that's well above my head.
But I'm just, if they deny you a hearing before they go full steam ahead with a felony case, maybe there are issues that should be heard and they deny you that.
Mm-hmm.
You're entitled to that hearing, and a lot of people have a hearing, and then a felony goes away, and a lot of people can't get that.
Now, I'm more interested in what you're saying about police getting preferential treatment, not being prosecuted. One thing that always annoys me no end is when something happens, when there's a policeman involved in the shooting, his name is not released initially. He's protected by the system. Now, if a person, I guess I'm distinguishing policemen from people, but if a civilian, let's use that word, is even suspected of doing something wrong, his name is dragged through the press. His mugshot is published.
Perp walk.
And it does the perp walk and all that. But a cop, he's protected like he's some kind of super being that deserves all kinds of benefits of doubts.
The perp work's been deemed illegal, and they still do it. News 12 does it.
Uh-huh. Well, News 12 doesn't do the perp walk. They just film the perp walk. But, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
And then there's the 48-hour rule where the cop doesn't have to say a word except to the cops. And there's the thin blue line that's going to cover him anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And it's a great way to get your story together with the other people that you might be involved with.
And say that no cop is ever prosecuted. It's uh-huh. just, it is skewed, and we know it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, they get administrative leave, and there's been a couple cases where in Seattle, actually, where people a homeless guy was shot for having a knife. He was whittling, and he had a 3-inch knife that he was using to whittle, and there's been a lot of controversy over that. And basically, the police, it took quite a while for anybody to really pick it up. And I still, actually, I don't know exactly what happened to this day, but they really didn't look too keenly or too closely at it. So it definitely seems like a bit of a double standard. And then there are public servants. So as citizens and taxpayers, you know, we take care of them. And there just seems to be a big image machine as far as like how they're portrayed, and they're very heavily protected and can do no wrong because the institution itself would then become vulnerable.
You know, but would it? You know, because then you say, well, here was a bad guy and we had to weed him out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Tankliff. That guy just wouldn't consider anything but that Tankliff's guilty.
Right, right.
Tankliff all over and over and over and over and over.
Well, thank you for your call. Where are you calling from?
Brentwood.
Brentwood, New York. Okay, thanks for your call.
Emmanuel?
Yes, go ahead.
Just briefly, I pulled in about elections on your other show,
uh-huh.
and Emmanuel's got two shows. That's a great thing.
Yes.
Looking off the wall. Anyway.
Well, briefly, only one this week.
In my district is 33. There are four different districts in the gym. We had no voters at all, but there's a reason. And I'll keep it short. In Islip Township, we only had a conservative, and it was only a primary. So I only had five voters that were supposed to come. Other voters brought their heart and tried to come and vote. They couldn't vote because they were out of the primary realm uh-huh. and not slated to vote for that day. They didn't realize that, but they tried. But all four voting districts had no voters the entire day, but it mattered enough in case someone came in or came in to drop off an affidavit or an emergency ballot or see a judge or something, but start with the voting district first. There are reasons it was held, but think of the expense, and mm-hmm. they could have done it with an absentee ballot.
All right. Listen, thanks for your call. We're going to move on to other calls now. 631-632-9872. Also, Kyle, I just want to say what you mentioned about cops always being portrayed as filling a vital service and being brave and all that. Yeah, that I think that is overused so much. I mean, right. Nobody's denying this, that a lot of people put their lives on the line every day in many different ways, especially firemen. And all kinds of other hazardous jobs, and I'm not denying that cops do the same thing, but in many ways, cops have a tremendous advantage over lots of other people. They wear vests many times. It didn't help this poor guy in Atlanta. But mm-hmm. do you know it's illegal to buy a bulletproof vest if you're walking around? I'm not 100% sure that's true. I've heard it said that you can't just go and buy a bulletproof vest. To protect yourself, you have to accept their bullets. Or I'm not sure exactly what the phrase is, but just they have access to tremendous firepower and armaments to protect themselves. And they have a very hazardous job, no question about that. But they also are able to protect themselves. They have a tremendous support team in every other cop in the world will come and back them up, right or wrong. So many times your individual civilian walking down the street, he's also one of the bravest, or she's also one of the bravest. So let's just put it in perspective.
Yeah, I would say it's state laws, I think, that prevent people from buying bulletproof vests. But I think there's a lot of interesting ways you can acquire one, even get it fitted for you. So
go to a tailor, a bulletproof vest tailor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And anyway, the other thing I wanted to ask you is, did you vote?
I wasn't eligible to vote in that one. That was a vote.
I voted by absentee, and I think that's a really good thing. People should vote and vote by absentee if you're not going to be around.
Okay, we have a bunch of calls. Let's see if we can tear through them. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Manuel Gig, how you doing?
Hi, what's up?
Not much. Listen, real quick, I know it's illegal to use the vest in commission. I'm not sure if I'm saying it right. In commission of a crime. Mm-hmm. I bought one about a year and about 2 years ago. In Amityville, and I don't know if it's illegal to do it. I just gave the guy my green, and that was the end of it.
Well, you know, I think there should be bulletproof vest formal dances. You know, where you just get all attired up in the nicest looking vests. But yeah, it's a silly thing.
But there are reasons to have one. I mean, you know, press photographers, people that go overseas into hostile areas, they're covering various things. You often see them on TV wearing vests. And as a photographer myself, I'd be interested if I was going into some place where there was bullets or things flying around.
I think overseas it's not a problem, but walking around Main Street with a bulletproof vest, you're going to meet some resistance.
I was working for an armored car company. It was right out of high school. Needed some quick money, and that was the only job that I could really get. And that was it. My folks advanced me a couple of dollars when I bought the thing. It was actually longer than 2 years ago.
Well, it was just a statement I made in passing, not really the main thrust of what we're talking about today. But anything else that you want to?
That's pretty much it.
Okay, and where are you calling from?
I'm in Del Porche.
All right, great. Thanks. Thanks for your call. Our phone number is 631-632-9872. We had almost a full switchboard there from a moment ago. Some people, if you fell off the switchboard, call right back. We'll get to you. I know time's out. I'm sorry about that. Let's take another call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi, how you fellas doing?
Pretty good. You're in Echoland. Where are you?
I'm just coming out. I was sitting by the radio taking care of my pop, and I'm in Quorum.
Okay.
What I wanted to say was that it's really a shame, like all these people standing up for Davis.
Mm-hmm.
The president can't even say something. He could go into foreign wars, you know, countries and, like, tell them how to do everything, and he can't just, like, kind of help one fella.
Well, what do you think would happen if he did? What kind of backlash do you think Obama would get if he stood up for this African-American guy in Atlanta accused of killing a cop?
Yeah. I know he has political faces to keep and everything, but it's just, like, that's what's wrong with the country, though. Like, the heart is going away.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. We're cold-blooded. We say, oh, you commit the crime, you got to do the time, or be killed, or whatever.
But I mean, it seems like there's too much doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in this case, I mean, how much more doubt could there possibly be, short of DNA evidence, which was not collected back then? It seems like a lot of people have recanted their testimony, saying that the cops pressured them, threatened them in some cases, that, yeah, you better label this guy as a criminal here, or you're going to be facing something. And cops can always get you on something. So people are afraid. And if you take that seriously, then you're sort of casting aspersion on police in general. And the court system is loath to do that. They don't really want to say those things.
There's good and bad and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy ain't going nowhere. I mean, so what's another month even, whatever.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to escape or anything like that. But yeah, getting the facts out, I think that's of interest to everybody.
Totally. It's just a month.
Just a yeah.
Some kind of something.
Yeah. All right, listen, thanks for your call.
Oh, thank you, fellas. Keep it going.
All right, take care. Once again, 631-632-9872 is our telephone number. If people have any thoughts on this, I'd like to know if people were even aware of this. I mean, Kyle, had you heard much about this before today?
Absolutely nothing.
Before we found out that we were preempted tomorrow?
No, I didn't know anything about Troy Davis. I haven't been paying attention to the news much. I've been working on a lot of different projects, so I've been kind of cut off by choice. So,
but you pour yourself into projects like no one I've ever seen. So there could be a nuclear war going on outside, and you would not know about it until somebody actually, you know, handed you a radiation suit or something.
You might be absolutely right, but please don't tell everyone.
I think that's an honorable type of way to do. The Japanese would be very proud of you because they pour themselves into what they're working on as well.
Well, Emmanuel,
unfortunately, they also have massive nuclear power plant accidents too, but that's a whole other issue.
I make it happen.
Uh huh. Well, don't make that happen, but. Yeah,
in general.
But no, you hadn't heard anything about it until fairly recently, like today. And I think a lot of people probably just hear, oh, another guy is going to be sentenced to death, and he doesn't want to be, and isn't that too bad? And, you know, what's on TV tonight for real?
Yeah, I hope I didn't come off as, like, being, like, a bit, like, rallying around that, because I really think, you know,
I would like to learn more. But I when you were reading the articles and the way they were written, I think my confusion is emblematic of how they were written.
Because
you read it very, very well and succinct, and I had some interesting questions as you were reading it. So I hope that something happens, that maybe a miracle, maybe this guy gets a little bit more time and some more consideration by the public before he's gone for eternity. So.
And this is I imagine you're feeling the same way I am, that you don't believe he's innocent, you don't believe he's guilty, you don't know for sure, you just want more information. And the people who were participating in the trial back in 1991 might say, well, how dare you, Kyle, question us? We already did this. Why do you want us to negate all that and start all over again? Who do you think you are?
Well, you know,
I think that was kind of rude the way they said that. I'm sorry, but I think you should answer them.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe they've done their job and we'll get a different set of people to take a look at it. I mean, it's time has passed. It seems like, I don't know, I'd like to know what exactly they were looking at and why. And I think everybody's really looking at that. Now that it's coming down to some final moments here, given the story, it's just, I really want to know, like, who actually shot all these people? And like, when is that actually going to get solved?
What's fascinating about this case is that there is no evidence linking the guy at all, except for the words of people who said he was part of it. There's no fingerprint. They found a pair of shorts in his house. I don't know what that even means. There is nothing that is actual evidence, just a lot of hearsay. And witnesses, many of whom, most of whom, the vast majority of whom, later took back what they said and said that the cops were pressuring them. And cops do that. I'm not sure how many experiences you've had with police over the years, but I've seen them play some pretty dirty tricks on people to get them to say what they want them to say. I was involved one time where a friend of mine was wrongfully accused of stealing a truck, and I was with him the whole night, so I know that he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But the cops were pulling all kinds of tricks, including a fear of prison and things like that, to get him to confess, to get me to confess, because apparently now I was involved since I was backing him up as well. And
just over some neighborhood dispute kind of thing.
Yeah, right? And in fact, we even found out who did it later on, but it didn't matter at that point because, imagine this. We found out who did it. The guy looked like my friend, lived two doors down, had a history of stealing trucks. Even the person whose truck had stolen realized that they had made a mistake in IDing my friend. But at that point, there was nothing that could be done. My friend actually had to plead guilty to a lesser charge, not the charge of stealing a truck, but a lesser charge, stay out of trouble for 6 months. Otherwise, the case would have gone on for much longer, cost a lot of money, and he could have been found guilty anyway.
Just for the sake of the paperwork.
So that is the system. That's how the system works. It's something fairly minor like that. Now imagine murder, capital murder. The same basic nonsense goes on, and people just want to get it over with one way or another. But in this particular case, there is a life at stake, and murderer or not, lives are precious, alleged murderer or not, and we should know everything that we can possibly know and make sure that we're doing the right thing. Hey, we're out of time. I'm really sorry. Gosh, I don't know where the time goes, but it's an intriguing topic, don't you think?
Yeah, good really show.
Is. Yes, it was an interesting discussion. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. We won't be on Off the Hook tomorrow night because there's an execution happening. And, listen to WBAI anyway during that period, because I'm sure you'll hear some really riveting coverage and a lot of interviews that you wouldn't hear in the mainstream, as you will on this station too, Democracy Now! Tomorrow at 5 and all kinds of other programs, insights, things like that. That's what non-commercial radio is all about. That is, if you can hear our signal or get through all our technical problems. Hopefully this music will play. Kyle, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, yeah. I've enjoyed myself, and hopefully we'll be back with all kinds of interesting stuff next week.
Hopefully with a bit more of an upbeat program.
And a working CD player.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night.
There's nothing as cold as the freeze in your soul at the moment when you are arrested. There's nothing as real as the iron and steel on the handcuffs when you protested. You raced through the night in the prison of fright as you head for the quicksand of questions. And children unborn will see you in scorn if ever you make a confession. And the click of the lock is a shiver of shock as you wonder what are their objectives. Up on your guard, for the voices are hard that belong to the cops and detectives. And it's hard to believe, as they roll up their sleeves, that you're in for more than a session. And it couldn't be true, and it's not really you that they want to make a confession. You cannot conceal the confusion you feel as they steadily work to outguess you. And some will pretend they are really your friend who rally around to your rescue. With frightening force, your mind is divorced to give them the guilty impression. Every word that you hear is a weapon of fear to win the war of confession. The lights shoot a glare like bullets, they stare and burn at the base of conviction. And you squint and you blink and you try not to think of the cobwebs of contradictions. And your clothes will be wet with the rivers of sweat that tells the tale of the tension. And once in a while the clock has to smile as it counts the time of confession. The questions will rain and pour on your brain with a proper speed they are driven. The circles they pace and the sneers on their face tells you no quarter is given. You can salvage your mind when the paper is signed and the crime is solved by oppression. But win, lose, or draw, it's the rule of the law to always work for confession. And the balance of scale seems distant and pale in the shadowy days of the trial. And sometimes they die with their name on a lie when it's all too late for denial. When agreement is full, the switch must be pulled, and the chair leaves no hope for correction. But the chances are large he was guilty as charged. After all, he made a confession.
Yeah, kids, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. My name is Finn. This is Finn's Revolution until 9 p.m. We're doing a John Coltrane special tonight. His birthday is September 23rd.